A week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, up on the edge of the prairies. It was warm early in the week, warm enough to sit and eat your lunch outside on Monday, and then everything changed quickly. The cold front moved in on Wednesday, and the leaves started to fall. A good many of them fell by Wednesday night, by the time the kids got home from school. Autumn come upon us. It was lovely on Monday, such a beautiful day. People were out riding their rider mowers just for the fun of it. Clarence Bunsen was out riding around town. There he was, 62 years old. People looked at him. He looked like he was going someplace. He had that look of mission in his eyes. But, of course, you can't fool people in Lake Wobegon. It's too small a town for that. People could see he was just riding around just for the fun of it on a warm day. A lawnmower is for mowing lawns, for heaven's sakes. If you want to just ride around, get a motorcycle or something. But he seemed to be having a good time. Last warm weekend was the weekend of Oktoberfest at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility Church, and they held it outdoors, polka dancing out on the grass, brats and sauerkraut. They had the Gesellschaft Gemütlich Polka Band from New Ulm and their eight exhibition dancers, beautiful polka dancers dressed in matching red. Four men, four women, enormous people with thighs like Percheron ponies. And to see people that big, so graceful, moving around. They're just dancing around and around in circles and their heads staying level the whole time. Kicking up their heels. It was kind of a little object lesson to all the rest of us. The Sons of Canute Lodge holding its all-you-can-eat sardine feed today. Some of the sardines left over from last year's sardine feed. A lot of people didn't come last year because of the bad weather, so they'll be serving those sardines this year, along with sauerkraut and pickled beets. It's quite a feast, so if you have not enjoyed sardines in the past, here's your chance to not enjoy them again at the Sons of Canute Lodge. Well, the political season is upon us in Lake Wobegon, and that means that people in the Chatterbox Cafe are very careful who they sit next to and who they talk to and what they talk about. Everybody knows where everybody else stands, and people understand the virus that goes around at election time. It is that time every 4 years when Americans have a license to indulge their self-righteousness fully, just fully, absolutely, extravagantly with all sorts of other people. Politics is just kind of a weakened form of religion, is what it is. Telling other people how to be good is what politics is about. It's religion minus the meditative parts, just the sermon and a little bit of the hymn. To be good is a noble thing, but to tell other people how to be good is far more noble and much easier. So some people just save time and go directly to it. Especially us Democrats, we are highly, highly righteous people. And this is why other people avoid us on the street. And this is why we are so enormously annoying to so many people, is the very high standard of righteousness that we exemplify. People go to great lengths to run away from us. Most people, many people, believe the resemblance of honesty is good enough to do good when other people are watching. Republicans believe that we should trust in God, and they insist that we put this on coins and on the money. And as a sign of their faith, they take most of the money, Republicans do. And that is why they are the party of jails, and Democrats are the party of schools. On the other hand, we need education more than Republicans do. So you see it all kind of evens out. The bipartisan marriage of Dave and Darlene, going into 2 weeks before the election, with a few little bumps along the way. He's a Republican, she's a Democrat. Been canceling each other out at the polls for all these years. She woke up late one night a few weeks ago, and he was crouched by the bed, whispering into her ear, "George Bush is a good man. You are going to vote for George Bush. The economy is turning the corner, and we are bringing democracy to Iraq," he whispered over and over and over in a low voice. She stood it until he was on the fifth time, and she said, "Are you out of your mind, or what are you oh," he said, "I'm sorry, I thought you were asleep." She bounded up out of bed. He said, "Where are you going?" She said, "I'm looking for the pistol. Where do you keep the pistol?" She put on her bathrobe. She headed up the hall towards the guest room. The guest room has a lock on the door. She went into the guest room and she locked the door. He knocked. He pleaded with her to come out. "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't mean anything by it." She said, "You're darned right you didn't mean anything by." So she's been staying there in the guest room every night since, 2 weeks since. It's been hard on him. He's been pleading with her to come out. She came home the other night from leafleting, door knocking, door to door, and the house was dark. There were just candles lit. And there he was in the living room. He was in his maroon satin pajamas she gave him for an anniversary about 15 years ago. He had a smoking jacket on. She'd never seen that before. He was playing Frank Sinatra on the CD player. He'd opened a wine. There were two wine glasses in the candlelight. She could see immediately this was a wine that he'd paid 10 times more for than any wine he'd ever had before. It was one of those wines in a bottle with a cork in it. And he poured her a glass of wine. He said, "Please," he said, I miss you. I want you to sleep with me." She said, "Well, what's in it for me?" He said, "Great sex." "Oh," she said, "what's happened?" "Nothing. Nothing." "Well," she said, "that was the problem before." "What do you mean? I don't understand what you mean." She said, "Yeah," she said, I know that you don't. I know that you don't." So there they are. She wonders, why does she have to marry a Republican? But if she was going to marry a Republican, why couldn't she have married a rich one? Dave has been unemployed for a while. He made up business cards. He's a consultant, according to the business card. Unemployed would be another word for it. He was a teacher for a while. He was in construction with his brother and did various other things. He was inventing things for a while. She works in the cafeteria up at the high school. She'd hoped to become a beautician, went to school, trained for that, but that didn't work out. So she went to work in the cafeteria at the high school, making sloppy joes and chow mein and macaroni and cheese, serving it to kids on the chow line. Good job for a Democrat. Macaroni and cheese, perfectly good for you. You may have been hoping for beef stroganoff, but here, have some of this. It's okay. Don't think you're better than other people. Enjoy it. Make the most of it. Take it as an experience. Tomorrow be chow mein. Thursday, sloppy joes. Vegetarian chow mein on Friday. He was an inventor. There was a kind of creative spirit burning in Dave that made other people avoid him for a while. He invented a stabilizer for a water ski. It didn't quite work. He kind of needed to perfect it a little bit before he could perfect it, he was on to new things. He invented a freezer, a whole freezing section that you can keep bodies in over the winter at very low cost, called a geezer freezer. And he developed this and got a patent on it, but nobody was that interested. And by that time, he was off, and he'd invented a game. It was sort of a cross between backgammon and Scrabble. And you played it with small pebbles, and there was a kind of a big plastic sheet with footprints on it, and you would place your feet in a footprint depending on what you shook with the dice, and you would pass an orange under your chin to the person who had guessed the word that was on a card that you picked up from the middle when you passed go. It was a game that he explained to other people, and they just never could quite get it. He was in a big part of his life there, and he had high hopes for it, but it didn't pan out. It never has quite panned out. She said, "You're unemployed. How can you vote Republican?" He said, "I have never compromised my principles to fit my personal circumstances. Others might. I have not." So on they go. She's in the guest room. He's in the bedroom thinking about her, which is not a bad thing. Not a bad thing. Karl Krebsbach, who everybody thinks is a Republican, but who knows what anybody is. He got his political philosophy years ago. You run into him in the Chatterbox Cafe, you try and draw him out on the subject of the election. "Well, what do you think about the election, Carl?" He says, "Well, yeah, it's pretty interesting, isn't it?" Won't give anything away. Karl Krebsbach, who's our town handyman and carpenter, electrician, plumber, the remodeler of basements, a good man. Got his political philosophy years ago when he came back from the Navy. And he hung out with some friends that fall. He got back. He worked a little bit at his dad's Chevrolet garage, but not too many hours a day that they interfered with his having a good time. He liked to hang out at his friend Bob's hunting shack, which was about 10 miles north of town, out in the woods. They go up there and have a little bourbon and have a little beer and sit around and talk, and somebody would light a hand-rolled cigarette and they'd pass it around, and blue smoke drifting around, and somebody might bring a little plastic bag with white powder in it, and they put it on a mirror and they rolled up a $20 bill and they sniffed it through their nostrils, and they got to feeling omnipotent sitting there in the dark around a kerosene lantern drinking bourbon and beer and talking about this little town, how it just doesn't understand people. Everybody's trying to bring other people down to their level. They just don't want to let anybody get ahead in this town, and that's why we're going to go someplace else, by God, as soon as we can. Save up the money, hit the road, go someplace. He was on the road that night, driving home after a long night, smoking and sniffing and drinking at the hunting shack. He was heading home on that winding road that comes along the lake and through those dairy farms. The Hansen's farm out there, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And he was driving along at a pretty good clip, and the radio was playing, and he came up over that rise, and suddenly they were right there, those three boys, walking towards him along the shoulder, along the shoulder. It all took place in about 2 seconds. There were the boys, terror in their eyes, and the car swerved, and he waited for the thump of a body off the front of his car, and it didn't come. His car drifted along. He just coasted to a stop and stopped. Right there, stopped. And he thought, "I could have hit somebody. I could have killed somebody, and I did not. I could have. I almost did. And I did not. Thank you, Lord." He turned the car around, the dark, moonless fall night, the smell of apples and dead weeds and the air. He turned around and he drove back to tell those boys that he was sorry. And he saw them in the headlights. They were tearing up across the ditch and into the woods. They were running away. They thought he was chasing them. He stopped his car there and he turned it off and he tore after them in the dark through the woods. He yelled, "It's all right. It's all right. Everybody's all right." He went running in through the woods and chasing after them. He could hear them up ahead beating through the underbrush and breaking trees down in front of them. And then he stepped in a hole and he fell down in the mud. He lay there. It was his right ankle and it was all numb and broken. He lay there for a while and then he proceeded to crawl back to his car. He crawled through the brush. It took him a good long time. It was about a quarter of a mile. He could see his car way up there on the road. He'd left the headlights on. He crawled slowly towards it, had to stop once in a while to rest as the headlights got dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. He crawled towards it and he got there and there was just enough power left in the battery to start the car. He got in and sat there and he could see his whole life now. God had given him the grace to live his own life. All the gift you need. He could see that he was going to marry her, his girlfriend, and they were going to have children, and he was going to stay in this town, and he was going to raise his children the best he knew how, which is not very well, but with the grace of God should be good enough. And he was going to make himself useful to people in this town. And he was not going to judge people after this. He was just going to be useful to people. And he would help people and not expect money from them if they couldn't afford it. And people who could afford it, he would charge them just a little bit extra. And in this way, he would make his life through a life that he knew perfectly well by the grace of God, and he would not talk about things in conversation that he knew nothing about himself, and that includes politics. So there he sits, drinking his coffee, knowing a lot more than he lets on. Whatever may be his political philosophy, whoever he may vote for, he is a man of grace. That's the news from Lake Wobegon. Where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.